Hello, I'm Brian.
I'm Caroline.
I'm Claire.
And this is the Computer Weekly
Downtime Upload
podcast.
Well, we're back.
Yeah.
After 3 weeks. The adventure continues. We've been severally on travels, work travels.
Mm-hmm.
Holiday travels.
Yeah.
Yep.
Claire, you were in...
Vegas.
What happened in Vegas?
Splunk.conf 2019, the 10th annual Splunk conference.
Did you see Buttercup the horse?
I did see Buttercup the horse in several different locations. I took some pictures for you.
Cool. Look forward to seeing those.
Good, yeah.
And you've been on holiday.
I've been to the Vegas of the South Coast, Hastings, which was very wet, very woolly, on holiday, not tech conference stuff. Probably the most notable thing I saw there was the Hastings True Crime Museum.
Oh, cool.
So, yeah, apparently it's the UK's biggest true crime memorabilia place, but no, it's quite
what a claim.
Yes, it's very random, the true crimes they were focusing on. Lots of US serial killers, and then the craze a lot, and then Jack the Ripper. That was pretty much the main one.
That's all we've got.
Yeah,
Jack the Ripper, the craze.
Yeah, but I'd recommend it. £8.50. Concessions available.
Deal. I think if you need it. Good,
Jack the Ripper's a big theme around here. There's all sorts of Jack the Ripper tours.
London town.
In Spitalfields, Whitechapel.
Well, it all happened here.
Yeah, it did happen here. Mm. Yeah, horribly.
They never caught him.
No.
Slash her.
Uh-huh.
There was a theory it might be a woman.
Was there?
Mm.
Or a man dressed up as a woman. This is what I found out in the museum.
Uh-huh. Yeah,
so that's how he evaded. He or she evaded capture, because if it's dressed as a woman, you wouldn't suspect, oh, it's just a woman going about her business.
Yeah.
She's probably not going to murder anybody, particularly not women. And then, maybe it was that.
Yeah, some good acting taking place.
Well, I was briefly on holiday in Paris, but before that I was at an HR conference called Unleash. So we'll be talking a little bit about Splunk and Unleash. But first, we're going to talk about The Circle, Channel 4's reality show. Now, it might seem a bit like yesteryear by now.
It does.
But this is our first chance to talk about The Circle on the podcast. And thanks to Claire for introducing me to this, which I really enjoyed.
You're welcome. The Circle. Yeah, so your obsession with Love Island made me think that this might perhaps
This is much better than Love Island.
Whoa! What a claim.
Whoa!
Yeah.
I never thought I'd hear you say that. So I watched it last year when it launched. I think it's interesting watching people use a social platform, like the social technology, to interact with each other. When actually to us it's really interesting, but it must be really boring being in there talking to yourself, having to narrate your own thoughts the entire time.
Yeah.
They must tell them to do that, otherwise it would just be really boring to watch them.
Yeah.
I also wonder how the technology of the social platform actually works.
Or the voice to text.
Yeah. Is it just someone sitting in a room?
It probably is. It's probably some poor runner. Sat there going, I can't keep up. Like, oh no, he said in it, not
in. Because how would you get a piece of voice recognition software to understand if you're saying, and can you change the word you to just the letter U, please?
Mm.
Yes.
That's not a thing.
No.
Yeah.
No.
So I think each one of them just has their own little person.
Yeah, I think so.
Like a stenographer.
Oh no, Brian's face is just like...
It just seems so magical.
Had you put in a request for a case study? Like, can you please tell us the tech behind The Circle, please, Channel 4?
Yeah,
what a good idea.
It is, but like you say, it's quite interesting in the, like, a lot of reality shows, if you think of like Big Brother, where you've got like a group of random people put together in a building, which is a similar premise. All the sparks stuff like that come from the fact they are all in the same place and, you know, in like a sort of pressure cooker environment. So all the entertainment comes from that. So it's quite interesting that all the entertainment comes from the fact they're all kept separated and there's no interactions. You can't see...
Floors, apparently.
Yeah, yeah. So you can't see the sort of human-to-human element of it, but it's still entertaining. Because you're seeing... I guess that's how we're all used to communicating with people these days. It's like, that's how you would... things with social media.
Oh, so many of us work from home.
Yeah.
In general.
Yeah.
We're not on our team, but in the, you know, the world in general, people are working from home in their pyjamas in front of a screen.
Sometimes even less than not casting aspersions on anyone on our team, but you never know.
Yeah.
I do have my suspicions.
Well, there's always webcams.
Oh.
I mean, what they do on the show is a little bit like that whole remote working.
Mm-hmm.
I wish that they could have had several group chats open at once.
Mm.
You know, where they're like, circle, make a chat with Brian and Caroline, but then I should also be able to have a chat with like some other people as well at the same time.
That could be a development.
Yeah.
Because it is continuing.
The poor stenographers, though.
Yeah.
How would they write it again?
Yeah. I did wonder, like, I don't know if, like, say, you saw more of it than me, but was there a bit like where someone like responds to the group chat and then they're like, oh, actually, I don't want to respond to them. I'd love to see that in real time. So I do think sometimes when someone sends a message to a group chat and it just completely bombs, you can imagine everyone in their respective home. Oh, God.
There was a bit of that.
Oh, good. Oh, there good. Was quite that a lot seems of that, true actually. To life then.
Like, what are they talking about? Like, oh, no, I don't know what to say to that.
Yeah, I'll just pretend I haven't seen it.
Yeah.
Leave them on scene.
Leave them on red.
Yeah, and it was sometimes quite interesting to see them kind of editing themselves, or they would start on a message, or the stenographer was typing, and then they'd think, oh, I can't quite say that, and so on.
Yeah.
So do we think the right person won? No.
I didn't expect Paddy to win.
Yeah.
Did not expect, I didn't see it coming.
Yeah.
Don't think that he would have won if Ella hadn't have been booted.
Mm.
By Sammy / James and the mission to the end.
The circle of trust.
The circle of trust.
Yeah. I mean, I thought he deserved the money more.
Yeah, definitely.
So there was that aspect of it. I don't think Woody really needed the cash.
No, not when your dad is a superstar DJ.
No. But he was a lovely boy.
I did like him.
He was very nice. Yeah.
I think there was something that's kind of stuck out to me, which I don't know if we're getting... big themes now.
Mm.
But obviously the tagline of it is anyone can be anyone.
Yeah.
But it does seem to be the people who did try to be someone else. I know in the first series that wasn't quite the case.
Mm.
People who did try to be someone else seemed to come unstuck or didn't pretty seem quickly. To be quite as successful as the people who brought their authentic selves to
authentic
the
selves.
Yeah, to
I mean,
the proceedings.
That was Tim's line, wasn't it?
Was it? I didn't see that
people's,
one.
The people's champion.
Yeah, because he came second, didn't he?
Yeah, and he came, I can't remember exactly where he came within the players, but he was popular choice,
Because I read quite an interesting interview with Paddy, like saying about how when he went in there, the reason the whole format appealed to him was because he could go in there and not necessarily be defined by his cerebral palsy.
Mm.
He could be in there, I can just present myself any way I like, I can still be my personality, but people won't necessarily see his crutch or anything like that, he can just be him, but then... He got a few days into it and was suddenly a bit like, actually, I'm not referencing this, and it is a huge part of my life, and it's a huge part of what makes me who I am.
Yeah,
so,
I bonded with Georgina on that.
Yeah. Because I really liked her as well, and that whole thing with her, which is a weird, I think the sentence is going to sound really weird, but like the one where Richard Magley got blocked by everyone in the circle because he was pretending to be a 20-something-year-old lady called Judy, and no one really liked him or her as a result of that. And he got booted out. Yeah, where they spoke to each other and he sort of made the point, like when he was on his way out and he met Georgina, and he sort of made the point like, oh, you know, I was being fake in there, but the conversation we had
was
genuine, which is that's
about
quite
about her ileostomy bag,
which is really interesting. I think when you hear about like people who go deep into like catfishing and stuff like that, like for real, you can be like, oh yeah, although I was pretending to be someone else, the things I was saying I actually really really meant, and it's always like, but can you still mean it and be someone else? But yeah, I think
James
he can
said
yeah.
that as well.
Yeah.
James said that quite a lot
he
of
did.
The conversations that he had,
especially towards the end when he stopped talking about
the kid,
the fake kid, so
I missed that. So when did he just stopped, like anyone asked about love, just it's been a few weeks, I've not seen him, out of sight, out of mind, goodbye baby.
He deflected the ring.
Oh, okay.
Tim was relentless.
Did he suspect?
Sussed.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, and so did Woody. They sussed him.
Or at least they thought that perhaps whoever it was didn't actually have a child.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Not that it was a bloke pretending to be a girl, a single parent.
Or a very naughty boy, as Tim called him.
Yes, a very naughty boy.
When they all revealed themselves to each other. It became very dramatic in the last week with James / Sammy's Circle of Trust revolution.
He just went all in.
He did?
And completely started a war.
He did.
With the popular people.
Successfully, up to a point.
He basically paired up with all of the people who he thought were in danger of getting voted out for not being popular.
Yeah.
And was like, we need to rise against the popular
So what was that based on? Was that just based on past, like who's been blocked?
Who consistently came top. Imagine if next year they put in someone who knows at least like one of the other people in the circle but pretends like not to know them.
Mm.
Yeah. Were you quite outraged, Claire, by James Strobsami's strategy?
I don't, no, not particularly, but I think it would have been really difficult not to feel really, really guilty. Like, is he a sociopath? Just going around pretending to be a single mother to make money for his own mother.
Yeah. Also, as well, you wonder, in situations like that, do they fall back on like stereotypes? Oh, this is what I think, because you've not lived that life.
Yeah.
Which can be quite insulting as well.
Like, he did have a massive book of notes.
He did do a massive research, yeah.
Yeah, he claimed that he was going to use the money to help single parents in the group chats or in the circle chat. But then he kind of implied that he was going to use it to help his mum, who obviously is a single parent.
Yeah.
But, you know, he basically said, I want my mum never to have to pay a bill ever again.
Mm.
Which, to be honest, I don't think 75,000 is going to... That's not going to cut it. Like, how old is she?
They thought it was going to be 100 grand, though, didn't
they?
Yeah.
So they thought it was going to be 100 grand.
Mm.
So the bit at the end where they said, oh, but the people's choice gets 30 of it and then the 75 goes to the other people... Like, they didn't know that that was going to happen.
So his mum's like, oh my God, I've been like, I've had all the lights on, I've been running all the water, just thinking. Like, oh no.
I thought it was safe.
Yeah.
But he did, it was interesting to watch him lead his political revolution.
Mm-hmm. No, I think, that's quite interesting. Yeah.
Yeah, Claire had a very good description of it, do you remember?
No.
Something like bare chested bullshit. Because he never had a shirt on.
He never had a shirt on. It was uncomfortable. And there was there was a part where, when his revolution started going well, he took his shirt off and as a victory type thing. He was like, yes, yes. And then he's taking his shirt off. He throws it across the room. I'm like, James, calm down.
Oh, word.
Put your shirt on.
It makes you wonder if he's like that, like, just in real life. Like, someone goes his way at work, like, whoa, that's not appropriate, put that on. It's just, odd.
Well, he says he wants to go into acting next.
Oh, really? He was good at it.
Well, there was tons of politics in the circle.
Mm-hmm.
And when we were on our travels, the Brexit debates were in the background, in the Commons.
Mm.
And now we have a general election.
Yeah.
The day after the Computer Weekly Christmas party.
December 12th.
Great planning.
Yeah.
So we're going to keep a weather eye on the election. We're not going to go overboard on this. Try and take a technology angle, of course. Mm-hmm. We're calling this Tech in the Stump.
Yeah.
which appeals to me because it's a bit like Stick of the Dump, that... children's book, same rhyme, same rhythm. Caroline, you've noticed a couple of things that have come up early in
the
spending on social media.
I don't know if it has anything to do with the fact that, you know, we are heading into a general election in the UK, but yeah, Twitter's announcement this week that they are not going to accept paid for ads anymore that are, you know, politics related. So nothing that is sort of from a party sort of promoting themselves on their platform, or I think certain policy related ads either, on the basis that they're saying that if you want, you know, if you want engagement, that has to come, it's got to be earned on our platform rather than you forcing it on people. So they're saying they don't want that anymore. So, like I said, I don't know if that's to do with us, but also obviously the US elections are happening next year. So it's obviously a good time to maybe implement that. But it's obviously it comes after all the controversy around Facebook and the role that sort of misinformation and the sharing of fake news on that platform, the impact that's had on the outcome of elections in the US and other countries as well. And, you know, what can be done to clamp down on that? So Twitter coming out and taking that stance is being seen as perhaps piling pressure on Facebook to maybe, like, should you do something similar? Should you be taking more sort of direct action against, you know, proven cases that, you know, that various overseas regimes have paid for adverts that have maybe not been completely truthful, you know, vote leave campaigns, stuff like that? And they've said no on the basis that Mark Zuckerberg, is his view is that private companies shouldn't be censoring what political parties can talk about online, which is kind of interesting, but
that's
also
by far the more important social media platform.
Yeah. But then both of them, though, don't actually make relatively small amounts of money from political advertising, as it turns out. But yeah, but Facebook, the reach, and it will be far broader. But it's come at a time as well. It was like, particularly on Twitter this week, with the announcement of the election, there's been lots of talk about people saying, right, okay, tactical voting, that's got to be the way forward. With the general election this time around.
How do you mean?
So it's kind of people trying to find ways to almost game the first past the post voting system in the UK. But there's lots of websites that have sort of cropped up this week, sort of saying, oh, if you want to vote tactically, if you're against Brexit, put in your postcode here and we'll tell you who you should vote for in the next election.
Right, okay.
I'm sure there are, like,
for whatever outcome you want.
Yeah, I've only ever seen ones for that are anti-Brexit, but in the interest of impartiality, I'm going to say there's probably pro-Brexit ones.
There must be, although I don't think they have as much to worry about.
But yeah, the thing that's quite interesting about these websites is they've all cropped up. They're all kind of suggesting that they are an authority on who you should vote for, but they seem quite unchecked, unvetted. The results, have they been verified?
Mm-hmm.
And as we've said, with all the misinformation and fake news that we are aware that is going on social media platforms, should people just be blindly accepting the results of this and thinking, right, December the 12th, December the 12th, I should vote for this company? Because you don't know who is, I'm putting my conspiracy theorist hat on now.
I like that hat.
You don't know who's responsible for those sites. So could it be, it's being presented as an anti-Brexit website, but somewhere is Dominic Cummings, like, behind it all, just like, right, okay, I've thought of a mastermind. We'll tell everyone if you're anti-Brexit, you should vote this way. But really, we're going to end up with the Conservatives getting into power if you vote that way. So that's the thing that's kind of caught my attention this week, that these have all cropped up. And I think there was a report on The Guardian saying that have been rogue results found on some of these results, saying, if you want to in some seats, it's telling you to vote Lib Dem, whereas if you really wanted to destabilise the Conservative Party, you should be voting Labour because they're like second place in that constituency. So it makes more sense to vote for them because they've got a better chance of clearing out the Conservatives if they win. But so it's,
my goodness.
Yes. So I can see why people need websites. It's very, very complex.
Yeah, it's quite complex.
But you also need websites with actual, proper, accurate results, or otherwise, December the 13th, who knows what's going to... people are like, but I voted this way, I expected this to happen.
The country's just going to swallow itself whole.
Well, we got told it would explode.
Into the sea.
Yeah, we got told it would explode yesterday. Brexit, but seems all right. Haven't seen anything outside. Been walking around today.
We haven't done Brexit yet.
No, if we didn't do Brexit, they said it would explode.
Oh, if we didn't do Brexit, the country would explode.
Yeah.
Why? Because someone's not pressing a button at a nuclear power plant or something.
Social revolt.
Yeah.
Yeah,
because people just...
Brexiteers.
People want out. Yeah, I think it's themselves. If we extend again, people just... We want out. We need to leave now. Let's go. Like, there'll be rioting in the streets. But I think it's just it's a lot of energy to riot. There's a lot of coordination and prep involved. You've got to make banners and get weapons.
Yeah.
Who can be bothered? Right?
I think my writing days are behind me.
Have you ever?
I'm saying nothing.
What's the statute of limitations on writing violent crime?
We're changing the subject somewhat. So for the first time, the BBC have appointed they've made one of their reporters the digital election reporter.
Mm-hmm.
He was on the Today programme this morning, saying that the Labour Party has spent £3,000 so far on Facebook, I think mostly Facebook adverts, actual adverts, and the Liberals have spent £13,000 on that. So that's what we've got going so far, which means if you were to take it over the whole campaign, the Liberals will be spending something like £546,000 on Facebook ads, which would probably put them out of business.
But
it's interesting that for the first time ever, the BBC has appointed someone to look at this.
Yeah, because they were saying on, I think it was Channel 4 News yesterday, just about the the differences, even between like the general election, I think in 2010, just how back then it's like, okay, so the extent of campaigning, the majority of it was leaflets, and it would be sort of talking to people in the flesh.
Walking on doors.
Yeah,
all that kind of thing.
Yeah, and it's just now, it's even in that short amount of time since then to now, it's the digital sort of takeover of it all, and it's so unregulated in terms of like the legislation sort of controlling digital election spend as well, just hasn't caught up at all, which is why you can have things, you know, sort of like the vote leave controversy and things like that.
The bus.
Mm. So yeah, it's a lot of catching up to it. So it is definitely interesting. They've got someone keeping tabs on the BBC on the digital side of it. It's such an important part. You wonder why they haven't done it before. Given
definitely.
And the other impact that social media seems to have had is to drive a lot of women MPs in particular out.
Yeah.
And not on a stand again.
How come?
Hate speech. Trolls, Twitter and Facebook and things like that make it a lot easier for people to attack sort of female MPs and things like that, because it's, you know, rather, oh, I've got to go and write a letter and get a stamp and all that stuff. It makes it a lot more accessible for people to just be horrible. But at the same time, it is making it easier for them to highlight sort of the female MPs, to highlight the sort of the things that they're having to deal with on a day-to-day basis. Which
true.
Is, you know, I wouldn't say that's like, oh, you know, well, at least they can do that. But yeah, at least they've got kind of way of shining a light on it, particularly when Boris doesn't seem, or previously hasn't seemed that bothered to, or hasn't really paid much attention to it, or seemed that interested.
Have you ever sent a hate letter, Brian?
Never.
Oh.
Again, who's got the energy? Who's got that? I'm gonna be bothered.
Okay.
Who's got the energy?
Yeah.
Well, as I said at the beginning of the show, I was in Paris last week for the Unleash conference.
Nice.
Unleash is an HR conference. Politics was kind of there in a way, with the branding. Welcome to the epicentre of the workforce revolution.
Ooh.
Is the tagline for this HR conference. And this kind of thing always strikes me as a little bit strange, as someone who spent most of his teens and 20s...
rioting.
Doing political stuff of a certain kind. And I often wonder, I mean, even to me it seems strange, but I wonder if, like, most HR managers, marketing managers...
Yeah.
IT professionals going to these conferences. And I don't particularly want to pick on this conference, which actually seems to be organised by people from Budapest who do know something about revolution, to be fair. But it is something that you do see quite often at tech conferences, a kind of revolutionary rhetoric and using the iconography, communist iconography and things like that. Not that they were doing that specifically at this one, but it always strikes me as a bit... You know, what does your average HR manager, a marketing manager, IT pro make of
I'm particularly HR.
So they just wash over them.
Yeah, HR professionals always strike me as the most straight-laced of professionals that we probably report on, just because they have to follow so many rules.
Yeah.
And they know everyone's secrets and they can't tell anybody what they know. But, I don't... Do they like revolutions? I'd rather not.
Do they really want to be at the epicentre of a workforce?
Yeah, I think they're just... You can all sit down, thank you, and behave. You know, this is HR.
So, yeah, Unleash. Mm-hmm. That's the way it's kind of marketed and presented. Good event, a lot of people there. It was my introduction to HR.
Okay.
Because previously, although as the business applications editor, it should really be under my bailiwick, it has been Bill Goodwin's thing.
Mm-hmm.
So this is my introduction to this world, and it's interesting. There's a lot of stuff going on. There's a lot seems to be going on in the HR software space. It seems as though some of the things that were going on in other areas like ERP, CRM are happening but in a very accelerated way in HR. So for a long time companies have been focusing on their customers and customer experience. And now there's a move to treating your employees as people who should be treated well.
Mm-hmm.
Amazing.
Mm.
And their experience. So that's one thing that's kind of interesting to know, it seems to me. It's been a very cloudy area, work day, etc. I think partly because it's HR is a function where HR directors have had budget and they've gone for software as a service rather than having to go through IT. So that's been a bit of a theme of the space. Another interesting thing that came up was to do with skills.
Yeah.
One of the things that was being said at the conference around some IBM research is that, well, a few years ago, 2 or 3 years ago, it was digital skills that CEOs were looking for, mm-hmm. HR directors and so on were looking for. It's now more behavioural skills.
Yeah.
Interaction skills and things like that. It seems like some of the, maybe the younger techies that have been brought on don't have those.
Interesting.
To the same degree. They're not so used to working in teams and things like that. So that was another... That was another theme of the event that seemed to me quite interesting. Kind of unrelatedly, I sat down with the CEO of a company called Unit 4, which is an ERP vendor, really very focused on professional services and universities. Unit 4, ERP companies, so less to do with manufacturing and supply chain, but more people businesses, mm-hmm. things like that. Mike Etling, who ran SuccessFactors for SAP until around about 18 months ago, so he's been on gardening leave.
Mm-hmm.
It's always been my ambition to be on gardening leave. And I said, well, what did you do? And he said, everything. But the thing that he said to me that I thought was interesting, having covered his space for a while, is that all the really kind of fancy stuff, the advanced stuff, blockchain, artificial intelligence, data analytics, predictive analytics, blockchain, if I've not already said blockchain, all that stuff which some enterprise software vendors have been branding in a special way, like Leonardo for SAP, Einstein for Salesforce. He was saying, you know, we can't charge for this stuff.
They just people expect just it.
Customers expect all that to be baked in.
Mm.
And that he favoured an approach where you kind of, not so much downplay it, but you can't charge for it. You can't put a special list price for a bit of machine learning or a bit of blockchain or a bit of voice recognition. You just can't do that.
Mm. And I wonder if, I don't know, like when you hear like Microsoft, for example, who are big on AI and machine learning and everything, and they've been saying for years, like, oh, you know, for us, AI and these buzzwords, they're nothing new. Like, we've been baking it into our sort of software for years. So when you hear stuff like that, people just think, well, they just give it to us as standard, so why should we pay more for it? Do you think that's part of it? Like,
well, now it's becoming expected because other people have done that.
Yeah, like other people have just played it down. Oh, this isn't anything new.
Yeah, there's definitely two different philosophies. Oracle are a bit like that as well. They don't name any of their machine learning things. And let's move on to...
Splunk.
So, Claire, go into a little bit more detail about what happened in Vegas.
What happens in Vegas stays in Vegas. That's all the detail I can give you, Sos.
That's such a shame that we get sent there on so many conferences and we can never
We just can't tell you about it. Yeah, so I always go into Splunk knowing that I'm going to get quite a lot of good diversity and inclusion pieces out of it because they run quite a lot of sessions on different types of D&I initiatives. I've still got a couple to write up. One is already on Computer Weekly. It was a panel of female CIOs giving career advice.
As mentorship, advocacy and confidence for women in tech.
Yeah, exactly. That's the one. Mm-hmm. So one of the themes of this year seemed to be highlighting the difference between mentorship, sponsorship and advocacy in your career. So this applies to everyone, it's not just for women in tech. But basically, there's been this dialogue that women need mentors to help them to get from A to B in their career, and that can be, you know, like anyone who has a career path that you aspire to, I guess, or anyone that is willing to give you a bit of a helping hand. But people should also be looking for advocacy, someone who actually will stand up when you're not in the room and go, oh, Claire would be really great for this job because she can do X, Y, and Z, and I know that she's not applied for it, but I think that you should consider her. So someone who'll actually be a representative for you in a situation and speak out, not just to give you sort of subtle advice about what you should do, but to act as an advocate. So, yeah, that was one of the themes this year, making sure you all know the difference, which I thought was cool.
Cool.
Mm.
And I read your piece, very good, a lot of detail. There's a bit about even if your teams aren't diverse your customers are.
Yeah.
I thought that was an interesting comment.
Yeah. I thought that was quite cool. Even if you feel like you're the only woman in the room, or, you know, like only person of colour in the room, any gay person in the room, your team might be full of white, middle-aged, middle-class white men, but the customers that you're selling the product to aren't. The customers are going to look more like you. There's going to be someone out there like you that's buying the product, and really you should be like trying to make it better for them. Was one of the points that was made, which I thought was quite interesting.
So is that in like a don't get disheartened if you are sitting thinking, oh God, look at all these pale male
pale
people
male.
Around me. Yeah. Yeah, okay, no.
Yeah, exactly. Mm. Like, remember that you're doing it for the customers, and the customers are everyone, you know, diverse.
Because it does take time to make that change within a company in terms of diversifying the workforce and stuff. So I think that's an important thing to keep. If you're just saying, I think it's not happening quickly enough. There's you'll keep your focus on something else to keep you coming to work, I guess, every day.
Yeah,
like, what are we doing this for?
Yeah, exactly. And there was a debate, I can't remember if it made it into the piece or not, but there was a bit of a debate around whether or not you should stay in a company that's not quite diverse yet and just power through and be part of that change, or whether you should just move to a company that sort of reflects your values as your... applying.
Yeah.
It's a bit of a heated debate, really, because obviously you want to be happy in what you're doing, but at the same time the dial doesn't shift unless you know, like, there are people shifting it.
Yeah.
And, you know, so it's sort of whose responsibility is it really? And if you can see the grassroots of change, should you stay and, you know, like, help it out a bit, or should you go and be somewhere that's already gonna cater to you? It was a really interesting debate. There was not really a consensus.
I suppose every circumstance is different. And I guess as well, it's like, how easy or comfortable is it to work in a place that isn't diverse yet? And are you supported yet to make you think, okay, well, I'll stick this out? Or do you just think, no, I can't bear it here anymore, I've got to go? So yeah, I guess, yeah, I can see why it would be so heated.
Yeah.
And I suppose for someone like a software engineer or a data scientist, I mean, the work is very similar from...
Mm.
One kind of fairly similar tech company to another.
Yeah, so the only thing that's going to make it different is the workplace and the atmosphere.
Yeah,
exactly. And there was another interesting comment about bringing your whole self to work.
Yeah, well, like we were saying when we were talking about the circle, you know, like, the people who win tend to be the people who are authentic. And if you're authentic in the workplace, I think... people around you tend to be happier, you tend to be happier, you get more done, is my view.
So, cool. Yeah. Interesting. Well, story you've been tracing for a long time, Caroline.
Yes.
Does kind of, you know, the whole question of the social impact of technology has been to the fore in that story. This is the data centre that never was, or maybe in the future.
Well, yeah, will it not? It's the the Apple data centre saga in Ireland.
Is it still happening?
It's still, I know, I feel a lot like that. So it's still going on. Apple in May 2018 said that, you know, it's taken us 4 years to try and get, you know, go from announcing this data centre to getting anywhere near building it, and we're not anywhere near building it, so we're just going to cut our losses and just, we're not going to build it here.
Okay.
But at the same time, one of the reasons they had all these delays was because there were people objecting to the fact they wanted to build a data centre there in this place, in Athenry, in County Galway, because of the objectors, because of there were environmental concerns, the impact putting a data centre there would have on the national grid and supply and things like that. But also as well, it's like, it's a forest area. And although Apple was saying, oh, it's going to be powered by green energy, it's going to be really environmentally friendly, it's like, well, what's more environmentally friendly, a data centre or a whole load of trees?
Forest.
So that was the objections raised to it. But
some good points.
I mean, hard to argue against them.
At the moment, it is a forest.
Yeah.
Stubble forest.
Yeah.
Oh, right.
Yeah, Derry Donnell Forest is called. When Apple got granted planning permission for it, the objectors came out and said, look, we want to appeal against the decision to let them build it. And basically that's been what the to-in and fro-in has been over. And they got a judicial review into that decision and things like that. And then that's been pursued through every single avenue you can think of, through the Irish courts. And then, yeah, it got to a point where basically Apple's patience with, I guess, the court system overrided. Well, it was very short-lived. But yeah, so they cut their losses and just said, right, we're not doing it. And then, but at the same time, the court case still was playing out. So they actually did, although they said they weren't going to build it, they did actually, it did actually get signed off the planning permission part of it. So now they've said, right, we're not going to build it, but we're going to sell the land and someone else can build a data centre here now. But it has to be 2-hour plans that we got signed off.
What?
Yeah. So they're going to, they're selling it as a ready-to-go data centre development called Data, I think it's Data Hub West it's going to be called. And you can build a data centre there as long as it fits with the plans that have been signed off, that have been approved.
So to they're cutting the trees down anyway?
No, it just means, well, it could be that if someone buys the site and they want to build a data centre there, they have to build it precisely to what Apple's had approved to build it there.
Trees in the foyer.
Mm-hmm, could be. The local community, as Brian was saying, there's like the social impact of this story. They were very pro, aside from the objectors, they were very pro this project coming to Athenry, the basis being that they're saying that the area itself has been starved of local investment for years. So having a project like this benefit the local economy, but hopefully would result in follow-on investment, other tech firms maybe moving in, maybe even like the sort of startup hub emerging in that area or something like that.
Yeah.
So with the project not happening now, there's a lot of disappointment on that side that it's not happening. But also I think now, because they have sat through 4 years of this, maybe will it not happen, they don't seem totally optimistic about the fact that it will be sold. Like, well, there will be, they don't seem,
sit there forever.
Well, they don't seem particularly optimistic that anyone would want to buy it, mainly because of the problems that Apple's had trying to get its data centre built there.
Yeah.
But also, if you decide, like, okay, yeah, we will follow Apple's plans, but we want to deviate a bit, that means they'll probably have to put in a whole new planning application.
Back to the beginning.
Yes.
Right.
So, okay. Which, again, like, they have, one of the probably positives, if you like, that have come out of this whole thing is that there has been quite a big reform of the planning permission laws in Ireland to make it, to hopefully mean that if another data centre operator wants to build a data centre.
Happening again.
Yeah, so they've kind of, they've recategorised data centres as something that you can almost fast track the planning of to get them built, because there is so much pent up demand in Ireland generally for data centres and that kind of thing. So they're hoping, yeah, they want other companies to avoid all the delays and things like that potentially contributed to Apple deciding not to press ahead with it. So yeah, there is a possibility that someone might say, right, I'll buy it, I might need to tweak the planning. Hopefully it wouldn't mean they would go through all the same problems again, but there is still that uncertainty if you part with all that money and then find out, oh, actually here come the objectors again and they're like, hey, don't, you know, don't get your diggers out just yet, we've got a few points to raise. From the people I've spoken to in the area, it seems to be there's a hope that, yeah, it will be developed, but they are doubtful it will be a data centre.
Did you go there?
No, I wanted to. I really wanted to. But no, a lot of this was, all my reporting on it was done through Skype to people, either as they're at work there, or yeah, or done over email. But yeah, I did want to go there. I was at a conference in Ireland, in Dublin, about 2 years ago, around the time that one of the court case on this was going to come out, and I was trying to like say to Brian, I was like, how much, Brian Glick, our editor, I was like, all right, if I hire a car and if I stayed in Ireland for a few days, but
you just head to the trees.
Yeah, but it didn't really quite work out that way, because there's so many delays in this that if I'd gone there, the court case, they like basically deferred the decision, so I would have stayed there for no reason anyway. But no, it didn't quite work out. I was hoping to, but
well, maybe one day.
Yeah, maybe.
When AWS or Microsoft,
That's it. Depends. Yeah, will someone Google buy it?
Or Alibaba?
Yes, possibly. That was an organisation called Hosting Ireland who are hosting Ireland, and also this other organisation called IDA Ireland. I think they're involved in like sort of marketing it and not trying to encourage people over here. So they have said, oh, maybe it will be, like, say, AWS, Google, Microsoft, someone like that might buy it, because they've all got data centres in Ireland at the moment and are always looking to expand. But yeah, could it be could it be Tencent, Alibaba, someone, you know, maybe people from further afield who need a European base? It's ready to go, guys. but yeah, it'll be interesting to see just if, like, say,
it's up for sale.
The problems that Apple encountered, if that will just put people off.
Is there a Centre Parks in Ireland? Centre Parks go that far?
I don't know, actually. I have been to Centre Parks this year, as you're well aware, but we didn't investigate the Irish, the potential for an Irish jaunt.
Well, if they have a franchise model, maybe we could club together.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I don't know what the asking price is of the data centre. I was trying to find out, but, you know, could be an investment opportunity for all of us.
£12.
Well, you said you had £90. Yes. So £12. Now we've gone over 100, guys. We're getting there.
Could have started somewhere. But it's been a saga.
Yeah. It's been, yeah, since I joined Computer Weekly, it's kept me in plenty of stories, which I was grateful for in my peak. But
and it's a saga that will continue.
Yeah, well, like I say, we don't know yet how, you know, we'll be tracking the sale of the site, but we've been hearing sort of through sources that there's maybe potential for other things, data centre related, to be done to the site if they can't get a data centre there. But I can't really say more on that because it's kind of a source thing at the minute. But yeah. Mm. Which I'm kind of keeping tabs on too.
Well, that seems an opportune moment to draw our little saga today. So
it has been a saga, hasn't it?
That's all we have time for this week. It just remains for me to say thank you to Caroline.
You're welcome.
Thank you to Claire.
Anytime.
Thank you to you for listening. Okay, bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye.